He pummels his block. He's in. Touchdown, North Dakota. Touchdown, Kaminsky. His second today. Kaminsky rolling out, and he throws to the corner. He's got a man pulled in. Touchdown, Tang Tang. Yes, sir. Touchdown, North Dakota. How about that?
UND Football 360.
Going deep. They've got something they like. It is caught deep downfield. B.J. Fleming, touchdown, North Dakota. Touchdown, North Dakota. 82-yard catch and run, and UND strikes first.
Analysis, commentary, news, and a look ahead. Look ahead. It's all things UND football. This is the UND Football 360 Podcast.
Touchdown, North Dakota!
With your host, Kelly Howe, and Tank McNamara.
Well, it's no game this week, but UND fans, we're sitting at a record of 2-2. We had clips of Coach Eric Schmidt this week saying, you know what, we're not satisfied. We didn't come here to be average, but that tough guy mentality he is looking for is starting to show. And I think fans can... you know, see a little upswing in this football team right now. Kelly, would you say the same thing about this program?
Yeah, I think we're seeing the foundation he wants to build. The message after the game, I think, is key. You know, he's trying to, because he knows the players are going to see it. He knows they're going to hear it, not just what he said in the locker room. They'll see what he says in the media. And he's trying to portray to the fan base through the media that they aren't there yet. They're not even close. They need to have a different mentality. They need to finish games. They can't be happy because, in reality, they're 2-2 right now. Okay, yeah, you can be, God, we look good. You know, we could have won both those games, right, Tank? Well, we didn't. So your record is what you say you are. You know, it 2-2. All right. So, you know, so that's where he has their attention. I think it's, you know, as stupid as this sounds, if they're 4-0 right now, I'd be a little more worried.
Yeah.
Because they would think they're a whole lot better than they are. Put it that way, because they got better teams coming up here than they've played. And I don't think he'd have their attention. And I think the coaching staff would be mighty worried because they're the ones watching the tape. They see the glaring issues that this team has. And yeah, I think, I think 2-2 is probably what they are. All right, that's where you're at. That's your talent level. That's where you're playing at right now. And you need to win 8 games to get into the playoffs this year, 12-game schedule. So, yeah, I mean, they are. It's encouraging to see the way they're playing. The defense, I like the new 4-2-5. I like it a lot. It's fun. It's dynamic. It's flexible, put it that way. And I think fans are starting to embrace it. So, yeah, it was fun. But yeah, last weekend, Velpo, I mean, the score ended up the way it was should have.
No, it was supposed to be 63-7. Yeah. I think that's what
picked.
Yeah.
Pretty close, Tank.
Yeah, 58-7. You know, we'll dive into the game a little bit, but I know we're going to touch on it a little bit later with Bill Chaves. I know you want to address some things with the athletic director on how the weekend went because, hey, you're a new Hall of Famer at the University of North Dakota. We've talked about it quite a bit on this show. Kelly, congratulations. But just besides the football game, like I said, we'll talk more with Bill Chaves, but your overall thoughts on the weekend going into the Hall of Fame class?
Yeah, it was a great weekend. Yeah, they did an outstanding job out there. Just well, very well organized, you know, and like I said, we'll cover it later. But yeah, it was A+. You know, for UND, our entire family was impressed, you know, from beginning to end. They didn't miss a beat, had everything organized. I knew what I was supposed to be doing at all times. And so, yeah, it was great to see everyone out. I mean, huge turnout of alumni and former teammates and stuff. It was just a very fun weekend, very organized. Got to catch up with Jimmy. You know, Jimmy's at every game now, Jimmy K, so because his kid's playing. So, yeah, it was fun to talk to him again. But, yeah, it was great. And then the game atmosphere was very good. You know, they did a good job. Great, good crowd. What do we got? 11,424
yep.
in attendance. 11,500, I believe, the game before that against Portland State. So pretty
fill
good
the
start.
Corners.
Yeah, Phil, they're getting there. They're getting there, and I think – I think people were entertained. You know, the energy's there. Now we just got to win. Got to keep winning and get to, well, geez, why don't we'll speculate on this a little bit. But, you know, they got their work cut out for them, put it that way. Yeah.
Defense, other than one drive on Saturday, and boy, I watched the sideline after Velpo scored. Let's just say there was a couple coaches on the sideline that got everybody's attention in the secondary. There was some kind of bad tackling. There was there was a checkoff that probably wasn't done on that play. So there was a little misconfusion, but it did show if you don't do your assignment, you're going to get embarrassed. But other than that, the defense played well. Offensively, it sounded like Velpo came in and did their homework and threw some things at UND that they were not ready for. And maybe some typical sets that aren't really typical in college football. It was kind of a little weird what they were seeing right away. So kind of took that offense a while to get flowing. Like I said to Schmitty, I said, nice win, but that first half was kind of boring.
Yeah, it was. Well, and that's
what do you expect? He said
it was a homecoming effort, and I said that at halftime when I was up in the booth up there for the media. It looked like a homecoming first half. The players weren't quite dialed in. You know, they're because there's so much going on during the week, you get distracted. Mm-hmm. Every homecoming's like this. Think back, look at the scores. I mean, I remember that one when we lose to Idaho State. We had just beaten Wyoming, had a clunker against Drake. Barely beat them because of the Wyoming hangover, and then Idaho State came in and just worked us. Yeah. I mean, up and down the field, and we're like, they end up winning two games that year. Well, homecoming, weird things happen. So yeah, it was a typical first half of the second half. Boy, that was unbelievable. Special teams. I mean, I want to get into the special teams here, Tank, because special teams did a year's worth of work in one game almost. It was crazy.
Yeah, you don't see that much in one game.
Yeah. Two block punts. John Butch got them both, number 16. He just came rushing through, and their wall guys he got through the wall guy one time, went around the other time. Sawyer Seidel with the electric. Now, the timing of Sawyer Seidel's electric kick return. Because that was right after that touchdown you just mentioned. Yep. So it's 24-7. People are looking at each other. I know I was like, it's 24-7 with Velpo.
Here we go.
Yeah, and he returns that kickoff, and I think that released a lot of tension in the building. And,
Did you notice Velpo? No one really wanted to be out there in the fourth quarter. They were phoning it in. They were just like, this is not good. You could just tell. Yeah. Special teams. You know, we talked about them earlier this year, and it wasn't on the positive side. So kicking was good.
Yeah, CJ Ulrichs, 3 for 3 on field goals. All three looked very good. Smooth, snap, kick, everything was good.
You feel better about him now?
I think so.
Going the rest of
that
the year.
The first game, I don't know. Yeah, first home game, he was just off. You know, Missoula, he missed the extra point. Second one, doinked in, you know, kind of worried. But then he hit the field goal right after that. So it's like, all right, you know, maybe it just took him a while. I don't know. You know, but, you know, he hit the extra points at K-State, down in Manhattan. So, no, I think, you know, after last week, I think everyone feels a lot better. It was just an outstanding effort. Kick coverage was good again. Like it always has been this year. Back to that touchdown, though. You know, you hate to harp on why they only gave up one touchdown. What they give up? The defense gave up 159 yards total. So it was a very good effort defensively. I think
it was hard for them to get to the 50-yard line all day.
Yeah.
Day long.
Well, and like I said, the first two drives, they were at the 50, and they punted. And I'm like, I get it.
Yeah.
But you're not winning this game by
blackjack rules say to punt. But
yeah, 20. You're going to net 20 yards, 30 yards on a punt against UND when you're a 44.5-point dog. It's like, all right, well, I guess you can. It was 4th and 3 on the one. I'm like, just go for it. I mean, what do you have to lose? Show your team, you know, that you're in it to win this thing, you know. So, but that touchdown, geez, I mean, you know, it's a good play. So Velpo ran a good play, got us out in the flat, tight end down the sideline. But the UND DB came over and went low. You can't go low in the open field. When it's, and especially got him on the sideline. Just go two-hand shove him out of bounds. I mean, I made a career out of that. Just run over there and shove him out of bounds, go on to the next play. Go jump on his back, grab him around the neck, whatever. It doesn't matter. You just got to get him in the open field. You don't go low because you got one shot at a moving ankle is all you got. Yeah. You're not going to – the chances of you missing the guy in the open field low, I'd say are 50-50. You know, if you go high, it's 95-5. I mean, you're just going to grab on and not let go. You know, and your teammates will come help you if it takes that. But, yeah, I think that's what they were mad about the check. They were mad about the pursuit. I think there could have been better pursuit.
Yeah.
But the pursuit by the UND DB who missed him was excellent. He just chose to go low, and especially in the open field, you don't go low. On the sideline open field, you certainly don't go low because you've got the sideline to work with. That's your defender, too. So, yeah, I think, you know, obviously we're nitpicking here. It was 58-7. But they, you know, these are the things where they got to make these guys understand it's not okay. They had no business getting in the end zone. Like you said, Tank, they were lucky to get across the 50 all game. And then they get this 67-yard pass. And it's like, you know, it's just those are the ones where, remember we went back to the Portland State game. Yeah, we were up 50-13, yeah. Whatever. But we give up the touchdown, or we're up 22-0, and we give up that touchdown on the seam. Certainly we were going to win the game, but it's a mentality. It's a belief. You cannot let them in the end zone. You have to stop them time after time after time. And it's just a thought process that you have to adapt. You have to adopt, and it's, I don't know, that's what the coaches are working on. It's going to take a little time, but we're getting there.
And, so, you know, we talk about the JYD mentality that Coach Schmidt brings in, the junkyard dog. I saw it in the fourth quarter with his defense. Wow. There were guys flying around. They were hungry. I know there wasn't a lot of people left in the stadium at that time, but, yeah, he saw a lot out of some of his younger guys, and they came ready to play this time around. So that was fun to see. The 4-2-5, you brought it up. We talked about it earlier this year that, you know, still hadn't really figured it out. What's your thoughts on it, and what do you see us doing with this going forward?
Well, here's what I'm noticing early is the run defense is much better. Okay, we have four down, two inside linebackers. You know, the seventh guy is the nickel safety. We're giving up about 85 yards a game rushing. And granted, you know, a couple of them are average teams, but a couple of them are pretty good, too, that can run the ball. So that is a real number, in my opinion. Will they give up more than 85 against some teams? Sure, certainly. We got better teams coming up. But
which was kind of an area of concern. Because we were like, ooh, that D-line isn't real big.
Right, and they're getting thin.
Yeah.
You know, guys are getting hurt. But, yeah, I like the way they're playing the run up front. I like the pressure they're bringing. It's not predictable. It's not a lot. It's not crazy. It's not often. But when they bring it, they bring it. They bring six. They like to, that's their number that they like to bring and cover with five. We have 10 sacks on the year. All right. You know, through 2.5 a game. All right, I'm good with that. You know, type of thing. We got 5 interceptions, though. Okay, so now we could have 10 interceptions. I mean, so...
Could have had 10 in the one game.
Yeah, the opportunities are there. That's what I love about this. 5 interceptions right now through 4 games, I'm okay. All right, new defense. But the opportunities are abundant. They've had chances. Like last week, again, I think it was Wiltshire went through his arms. He was diving forward. Those are tough. You got to kind of, you know, put your arms parallel to each other, not let that ball fall through, scoop it off the turf type of a look. Yep. It went right through his arms. And I don't even think he touched it. And it hit the ground. It was like, well, there's another one that Wiltshire could have got. Positive part of that, he's putting himself in positions continually as that nickel guy out there to make interceptions, make big plays. So they're going to come. You know, I have no doubt they're going to come. But, yeah, I like this defense. I like it. Offenses, you know, offensive coordinators now have 4 games of tape. So, you know, Eric Schmidt's going to be smart here. He's got to start keep adapting. He's got to keep bringing different looks because they're going to start to figure out what we like to do on which downs. You know, they're going to scout. So, but, yeah, through 4 games, I think if you're a UND fan, you have to be pleased with the look.
Cool. Offensively. Yeah. I don't think after four games there's any doubt that Isaac Frickte and Eric Schmidt made the right call at quarterback. Jerry Kaminsky looks the part. I think we're going to see him make some smart plays. He's a smart guy out there and just looks the part.
Yeah, he does. He's our leading rusher right now. He's tied for the most attempts with Sawyer Seidel, or Xavier Lee has one more attempt than those two. They're all 33, 33, 34. I mean, it's pretty amazing how they balance this out. But, yeah, he's got the most net yards. Jerry, 179 yards. He's got three touchdowns rushing, which is leading with Sawyer Seidel's got three as well. So, yeah, we're seeing this day and age, this is what he spoke of last year, you have to have a running quarterback. You can't have a quarterback, a pocket guy, and expect to go far. I mean, some teams can pull it off, but they better have, unbelievable offensive line and complementary pieces all over if you're not going to run the quarterback, which you don't see a lot anymore. So now this is what we got. We got Jerry can run it, and he's throwing well. Last week was much better than out in Missoula. And, yeah, it's a smooth offense. I like it. I think they're still getting used to their piece, especially at wide receiver. Fleming, BJ, he's became the guy now. He seems to be the big play guy, 12 catches, 224 yards, averaging 18 a catch. Okay, so Fleming's our deep guy. He's our longer route guy who can get open, can kind of twist the DB in open space. Corey Ty, I suppose, would be next. He's caught some downfield, but he's the intermediate guy, make a guy miss, catch it, type of thing. So, yeah, it's starting to come together. And, defensively, I want to point out Jai Martin. He's playing well.
Yeah.
Yeah, number four, fans. He is playing well. We play a lot of safeties back there, so it's kind of hard to get used to who's who. And some of them, they all have low numbers. And,
up sucks, too. It's like, I thought he was on offense.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, oh, yeah.
But, Jai Martin's got two interceptions. Bluette's got two interceptions. So, yeah, I mean, they're starting to figure it out back there. And I think it's exciting, as we look forward the rest of the year, eight games left, just energy. You can sense, we said it all offseason, they had energy. Well, they've sustained that energy through four games.
Offensively, Simon Romfo, I don't want to beat this to death, but I talked to him after the game and wow, what a great young guy. Probably had his heart crushed when he found out this year's starting job wasn't his at the beginning of the year. But you go back and listen to the interview I did with him on Saturday night, because he talks about it. It was a buddy of his that actually said, hey, what do you think about trying to fit in other areas of this offense? You should talk to the coaches. And so he did. He goes in and, Isaac Frickte and I were talking after the game, just him out there really gets the defenses start thinking now, like, oh, what's he doing out here?
Something goofy might be happening. Yep.
And it might be just a play up the A-gap, but you got them thinking out there instead of just playing, and any little advantage is huge in this game.
Well, it's Simon basically, along with the coaching staff sitting there and saying, what value can I bring to the team? Okay, I'm not the starter anymore. Okay, I get it. Jerry won the job. What value can I bring to the team, coach? All right, let's think about that. Let's talk. Well, they figured out a way this past game. They brought him in, did some different things. I think it was a reverse pass, to him right away. Then he ran the offense. Then he came in and was the quarterback. And there's just, like you said, there's a lot of options with him because he can run. He can throw as a quarterback, obviously, but he can run. And he's quick, very quick in space. So what do we do? When he comes in the game, he doesn't have to be the guy who gets the ball, but the defense is going to see him in the game.
Yep.
Just get their brain thinking a little differently than they would have.
Yeah.
Now, like you said, all right, A-gap.
Send them in motion, Whoa, what are they going to do?
Yeah,
and one of Simon's, maybe some struggles at times was getting it up over the offensive line and the line of scrimmage last year, because not the tallest guy in the world. Well, now you get him out in open space, but I did say to him before we talked, hey, can you say much? And he's like, So I just had to say, well, I'm not a genius out there, but you're wearing two gloves now. Well, I think you'll be throwing and catching the ball now.
Right. Well, it brings us back to our interview we had with the three of them. They wouldn't give us anything.
No.
It's like, geez, you guys. And then, yeah, good. I heard the review I got was, they're good soldiers. They weren't telling us, which is their job. They're not.
And from the sounds of it, that room hasn't changed. So you know you got a good group of guys in there because they battled hard. Well, some of them for 2 years now they've done this. And they said that room is great as ever. And Gall, I know he was Offensive Player of the Week for the Valley in week one. I think it was Seth Anderson. But I talked to him after the game. Wow, what a large dude that guy is. People that have seen me, I'm not a very big guy, but man.
Well, speaking of which, how about Beecher catching the touchdown? So Beecher catches the touchdown. Right away, I saw it. I'm like, oh, gosh. Yeah. And I think I walked away, and I went to the concession stand or something. And then it's nothing's happening. Well, they got TVs out in the concourse, and I'm watching the TV. What are they doing? Well, they figured out credit. Okay, we like to get after the refs a little bit. Credit to the refs in this one. They saw that the ball was tipped before he caught it, slightly.
On a two-point?
Yeah, it was tipped before he caught it, and so then it's eligible. Now everyone's eligible, right, because it was touched before. And I didn't see that, but, yeah, one of the refs caught it, so credit to them. So Beecher catches it. That's hilarious. And his dads are looking around like, I shouldn't have done that. Yeah.
Yeah.
But he didn't have any problem. No, you got it. That was good. So, hey, and how about the end of the first half? Let's give credit. We got the ball back, too. So Valpo punts 21-0, 25 seconds left. They punt. Well, the ball was going to hit and is going to go backwards on them. Their guy grabs it immediately to save yards. Well, tick, 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 tick. You should have let it just roll. Yeah, lose 5-8 yards, but it probably would have been 4 or 5 seconds, too. Would have came off the clock. Well, he grabs it right away thinking he needs to save yards. So we still have 21 seconds left. Well, a couple plays later, now we're down there, and Jerry ran a perfect clock drill. I mean, everyone sprinted to the line, and remember the three-second thing? You can't clock it inside 3 seconds. Well, he clocks it with 4. He snaps it right at 4, clocks it, boom, and we get the field goal off, and Ellerick hits it right before half. So that was a perfect scenario. It was tough to do, but hit the deep crosser, and the linemen all sprinted down, got up there. That was encouraging.
Yeah.
You know, you like to see your quarterback and the players be able to pull that off.
The players were all talking about how happy they were with that at the end of the game. So, I think we went in and got the job done that we needed to do. That's a fair statement, right?
Looking at, I think it's time to look ahead here, Tank. We got the schedules in front of us.
I play 1 week at a time, so
I have nothing to look ahead. I like to lay out 8 weeks, and say exactly how they're going to go, right?
I feel good about going to Northern Iowa now, don't you? I really think we're going to put on a show down there.
Yeah, they're struggling. I think they lost to Utah Tech, which is the old Dixie State transitioning to D1. They're playing. I mean, their phone, Utah Tech's phone, is ringing off the hook once they announced they were going D1, because now they count towards the playoffs. Well, their schedule's ridiculous. Every Missouri Valley team's called them, and so that was a tough loss. Like we said, it's a transition time for Northern. We need to get this one down there. I realize it's a tough place to play. You're going into a bit of a time warp again, kind of an Idaho State time warp where you get the – you got the pastel colors or whatever from the long time ago on the seats. And I think there's work being done to the building. I don't know if they're done yet or it's coming up. But, we got to get that one October 4th. So we got a bye week coming up this week. That's why we're not talking pregame right now.
Yeah. I can't mention then, the coaches. They're going to be busy. They're out on the road this weekend. And
recruiting.
I know there'll be a contingency, I believe, in Missouri this weekend. There's couple of guys down there that
they gotta hang on
All right, yeah, they got to go down and make sure things are going okay down there.
Yeah, the Beaver brothers are getting hit hard right now. George Roll, I believe, is getting hit very hard right now. Now, our 6'7 tight end, we got to commit from. Let's just say
he's out of Wisconsin, right?
Yeah, the Big Ten guys.
Really wants him.
Minnesota's
right?
in now, oh, okay. I think. My sources are telling me Minnesota's coming in now. So, yeah, but here's the positive thing. It's not positive that I could count about eight guys that are going to get inundated with Big Ten interest here shortly, but it's a positive because the Big Ten thinks they're worthy of a scholarship or NIL money, the equivalent of a scholarship, you know, however we want to do it these days. So we knew that UND's recruiting class was good this past summer, as good as it's ever been. It's not even close, but now you got to hang on. So I think these coaches, I don't know if any of them are in Grand Forks right now. They're all out, and they got to try to hang on and get – and it doesn't mean a lot, but it shows – they got to get out there and show these kids, hey, you're our A1 priority. We told you that last summer. We told you that last spring. We're telling you it again this fall. We're – you know, if anything changes, we get it. You know, if Iowa comes in with a scholarship and a bag, I get it. You know, we get it. We're not stupid. If Minnesota comes in, all right, we get it. But we want to let you know, hey, here's what we can do for you. Nothing's changed. And that's the message you just got to send to the parents, too. But if the big boys come in, by all means, yeah, we get it. We understand how it works. So.
Well, the attitude and the effort we've seen has to be promising for these recruits. There is a good foundation here.
Energy. Yeah. And the Kansas State, you know, that game was perfect timing, obviously, for the kids, for the commits from down there.
I know we're banged up a little bit. Tom Miller just had a nice story out there. We're actually going to go over to Red River and grab a tight end for last Saturday. have one right. on standby. That room's been hit a little hard, but was it Malachi after the game? We were talking about the facilities now, the medical facilities that they have and the nutrition that they have. And he said his body is feeling as good as it's ever been after four games. So that's starting to pay off. And I think you see it out on the field, too. We're going to be a little bigger, faster, stronger out there. And so that part of the game has really taken notice for me.
I know tight end coach Gordy Hoag said he fully expects after the bye week to have all his tight ends back, which means Stay, Baymeyer, all those guys are back now. So you get all our tight ends back. Now our offense is back, you know, full go, especially with blocking the run game, you know, that type of thing. So that'll be big. Defensive line is always going to be thin just because those were season enders. So I don't know what you do there. Wide receiver should be okay, you know, coming back. Running back seem to be okay. So, yeah, I mean, O-line, Caleb Olsen, it's going to be a while. Hey, I don't know if he'll make it back or not. But we could use little time at O-line. You know, I think they need this week off because those guys get beat up pretty hard. But, yeah, tight end, that'll be the big one. I think they're going to get them all back here for Northern Iowa. And then looking ahead, Tank, you know, it's a – if anyone who's looked at UND's schedule, it's a flip-flop the rest of the way out. So road, home, road, home, road, home, road, home, you know, the rest of the way out. So it's – which is kind of interesting, you know, for fans. You know, I don't know. That'll be all right, though, for fans.
I like it as a fan.
Yeah, you don't have every to worry about week. Two weekends. You can take a weekend
go,
off,
like,
go to
three
family.
Weeks sometimes, and then it's 2 weeks. So
And then, yeah, Youngstown State would be the next home game, October 11th. That'll be a big one because Youngstown's look good. They've been they've looked about how we thought they were going to be, you know, a fourth or fifth best team in the Missouri Valley. Saying we lost to them last year, we had no business losing that game, but some we did, and I think we owe them one here. So that would be, I mean, they get Northern Iowa, they get Youngstown. The toughest game to predict here for me is the next week, October 18th at Southern Illinois. They've looked good. You know, they always have good players. They always look good in their pads every year. You just don't quite know how they're going to be. A couple of years ago, they made the, you know, or was it last year? They made the, little run in the playoffs. I think they lost out at Idaho, but they were a good team again. So some years they're down, you know, they're a little bit unpredictable. Let's put it that way. I don't quite know how to explain it, but they always look good. And they always have players that are, you know, transfers type of thing. And yeah, that'll be the tough one. I think if we can get that one down in Carbondale, UND's in business. I mean, because now you're 3-0. Now you get Indiana State at home. You owe them one.
Ooh.
So from last year, yeah. So that would
better punch those guys in the mouth. Oh,
they owe them. Yeah. So now you're 4-0. Okay, South Dakota down there, 50-50. We win once every 10 or 15 years down there. So they're not looking as good, like we said. No, they looked better last week against Drake. So, but Drake also got beat up the week before by South Dakota State. So it's like, all right, it's tough to predict. But yeah, looking ahead, I mean, there is just the margin for error is slim with this team. You know, they're not quite what they need to be, obviously, you know, with the rosters, but they've looked consistent and they've looked good. They've been aggressive and the coaching staff, you know, has done a great job. So we got to go 8-4. I mean, I'll just say that right now. I think in a 12-game season, you got to win 8. So can we go 6-2 with this schedule left is what all UND fans got to be asking themselves. 6-2 is the goal, 7-1, whatever. But you got South Dakota State and you got NDSU on there. So that means you got to beat one of them. If you're going to lose the two of them, you got to run the table with the rest of it. And that's just the situation they're in. They put pressure on themselves. Now they got to live up to it.
That's got to be deer opener weekend for that Bison game, isn't it? I don't think I looked at that.
Yeah, that's deer opener. But if you're gonna have a home game on deer opener, that would be the one. Well, people skip deer opener, come to that one. You know what I mean? They'll go out Friday. Friday at noon.
Deer going to be happy around Harvey for that game? They're happy every year when you go hunting, happy right?
Every year.
Oh, he's back again.
Yeah, I scare the heck out of him every year. Oh God, it's just brutal. It's just. I mean, the worst is when they're standing there, they don't even move. It's like, what? Where did I shoot? I turned to my dad. Where was that? Like, did you see the dirt fly? Like, did I do anything? Like, the deer didn't even, like, or they're running and they don't change their course at all. I'm like, where did it go? Well, he must have been high again. He's like, I don't know. It's brutal.
Yeah. I just looked. I go second weekend, so it looks like Murray State at 11 o'clock.
Yeah.
I hunt Minnesota now, so we hunt in the morning, nap. I'll have to skip my nap for the Murray State game and then go out for the evening hunt. That'll be a great Saturday.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's a good setup. Yeah, but the season ends
and the deer around Otter Tail are always excited to see me come hunting. Right. I'm kind of the same boat as you, Kelly.
Your best friend.
It's fun just to participate, right?
Yeah, I'm just happy to be out there until I miss much time spiking stuff on the ground.
Now I gotta keep going to the bar, right? Get rid of the misery. So, well, we'll be back next week. We're gonna hit the Northern Iowa game and preview that next week. But I want to thank Bill Chaves for coming on today as well. We're gonna be talking to him coming up, and he'll have some great knowledge and maybe a little navigation system for where we're at in college football right now. Because if you can figure this thing out, you're a genius. Because most people can't.
The UND Football 360 pregame show is brought to you by Rumors Sports Bar, Grill and Casino, Development Homes, Inc., Gaming, Simulcast Horse Racing, Electronic Pull Tabs, Blackjack, and the Pig Wheel, Interstate Industrial, Oilfield Services, TankLogo.com for all your promotional product, corporate apparel needs, and e-commerce platforms, TankLogo.com. And the Kelly Howe Agency with NODAC Insurance. Call today, 701-532-0624.
Well, with the bye week and the landscape of college football, we've decided to open up a can of worms right here on the 360 podcast. The state of college football, as everyone knows, is really changing on a, let's just say hour by hour basis. I don't think anyone can follow it. We've decided to ask UND Athletic Director Bill Chaves to join us here on the bye week and just get a little rundown of what's going on. But, Bill, a couple of things. Homecoming weekend was this past weekend. Great time. And address that. And then also I want to talk about Eric Schmidt and the job he's done so far since you put pen to paper with him.
You know, I appreciate it, Tank. And Kelly, thanks for having me on, as always. Really enjoy talking with you too. And I should say the Hall of Famer, Kelly Howe. So at the end of the day, I mean, for us to induct he, along with several others in a women's basketball team from 0001, Coach Roebuck's team, it's a special night. If you go back to homecoming weekend, not every year happens this way, where we connect the Hall of Fame, the Athletic Hall of Fame, with the Alumni Awards. The Alumni Awards were on Thursday night. And so it just worked out in the schedule that it could work out that way this year. And it's phenomenal. It's phenomenal to see people come back. And honestly, it's why we do what we do. You know, the chair I sit in can connect eras. And that's a responsibility we take very, you know, it's a significant responsibility. And, you know, our friends in the Alumni Foundation, our staff, a number of folks make that all happen. And but it was certainly exciting, and then topped off by a football game. Right. And I thought the team, you know, did exactly what they needed to do against Valpo. And then here we sit on an off week.
Well, Bill, I just want to take this time, you know, to formally, so everyone can hear, to thank you guys for what you did this past weekend. I wasn't prepared for the depth you guys went on a Hall of Fame weekend like that to be inducted. And I wasn't sure, you know, what I was walking into, what it was going to be. And it was way more. I mean, my wife was just blown away, and we're like, wow, you know, we kept looking at each other like, oh, that was cool. You know, we're like, it was a new layer and a new layer, you know, all through the football game. We kept having things going on, and the banquet Friday night was outstanding. It was, the room was immaculate. We walked in, we're all looking around like, wow, they took their time to make this special for all the inductees. But I just want to say thank you. Val did a great job all weekend. She was very organized. Ellie, leading up to it, did an outstanding job with communication. I always knew what was coming up, and I always knew what was expected of me, what I had to get her. And then, of course, you guys, you know, you and Paul ran a great show up there Friday night. It was fun. Yeah, I just wanted to make sure that I took time to say thank you and let everybody know just how unbelievable it was and just the first-class operation that you ran this past weekend.
Well, thank you very much for those words, Kelly. It means a whole lot. You know, our letter winners committee, made up of seven individuals, take this evening incredibly seriously. I mean, the honor that was bestowed upon you is something. Obviously, it's a culmination of what you did here, and it's exciting. To be able to do that each year, it never gets old. It's always awesome, and the one thing that we were able to do, coming into our new facilities here, was we had a number of UND alums, our developers, who just did a tremendous job for us. Steve Burian, Craig Tweeten, Kevin Ritterman, Steve Burian. They donated the Hawkway, and we've now put the display, the Hall of Fame display, in that Hawkway. So if anyone gets up to Grand Forks and you come to our offices and you're going between facilities, so to speak, you'll see it there. And it's awesome. It was on the third floor of the Ralph before, and honestly, if you really didn't have seats up there, you wouldn't have seen it. So we're excited about that as well. But 50 years, we celebrated 50 years of inductions this past week.
Can I ask, Kelly, I think it was Bubba's video that said you had a big play against NDSU and then got a 15-yard penalty leaving their bench area. Can I ask, what did you like see what they were doing after the game? Do you remember what you said over there? Or?
Well, what I didn't add in there was, I remember it, but yeah, we got a little deep into the bench because it was on their sideline and stuff, and then their defense was running out onto the field, because we had just turned them over, and I happened to throw the ball off somebody instead of giving it back to the ref, and that might have done it.
You know who it was?
No. I can't remember who it was, but I think I knew him actually. Like a lot of back in the day, we knew each other pretty well because we were all from different towns. So that day we weren't communicating very much, but on the off season we did a lot. And so I think it was something like that. But yeah. And then the funny part about that is, my son, you know, along with the ring he found that he showed everyone for a minute straight during the introduction, at halftime, he found the tape of that game. So he's playing it. And I'm like, what are you watching? Well, he has a VCR and he's playing the tape. I'm like, oh, that was that. Well, right after that, Coach Underwood on statewide TV, the camera's 5 feet away. Okay, the live. So they cut to the camera 5 feet away. He is chewing my ass for that penalty. Just finger in my face, yelling at me right on TV. It's like, what the heck? I'm like, and I'm standing there just taking it, you know, because he's right, you know. Yeah. I'm like, yep. So, no, it was funny. But, yeah, Bubba, for him to pick that story.
That was funny.
Like, yeah, and that kind of sums up how it went up there, just ups and downs. It was good.
So. Yeah. Bill, you got to be happy with the work Eric Schmidt and his staff has put in since they've got together in Grand Forks.
Yeah, you know, Eric and his staff have done a tremendous job. And, you know, anytime you, you know, you go through a coaching change and you just don't know how the process is going to work out. I always say, like, you could go through the same one five times and it could yield five different results. And but I think where Eric was in his, you know, life and in his professional life, I just think it's an awesome fit for both us at the university and hopefully for him as well. And yeah, he's you know, gotten going pretty quick. And I think he has, you know, some lofty expectations for the program. And we all do. And, you know, obviously we had a couple tough results in Manhattan and Missoula. But I don't think that has, you know, I think the future's bright, no doubt about it. And I think our guys believe. And that's as Ted Lasso said, right? That's part of it. I mean, you've got to believe. And obviously, we're going to go to the teeth of our schedule now. And we're going to find out where we do stack up at this stage. But we'll find out pretty quick.
As far as Coach Schmidt, now I know in the interviews, obviously, we weren't in there. But I would assume one of his big pitches and where he tried to sell you was, you know, his knowledge and his experience with the modern football era, which is like changing by the minute here, I guess, by the, you know, every day. But he, you know, he seemed to bring in the nutrition. He seemed to bring in the NIL angle, all these things that he, you know, he had experienced out at Washington and San Diego State, et cetera. Have you seen that? I mean, he's only been on campus for 9 months, I believe. I mean, have you seen that? Is it a continually changing, implementing thing that's been going on where he's just, yeah, you know, now we got to do this. Now we got to, how do we get to this? That type of thing.
Yeah, I think, you know, Kelly, it was really something that, you know, they did when he joined Coach DeBoer at a couple different stops is kind of the 12-month calendar. And, you know, we're just in the process of playing games now. And so, you know, I think he has a vision on how each and every one of our, you know, 106 student athletes need to develop. And I'll say this, you know, in the landscape that we're in today, the thing that we still, I believe in, and I think can happen, it can be a transformational experience for someone. If someone wants a straight rote transactional experience, that's out there too. For sure. But I think he's really trying to look and see, hey, you can develop here. You can get to the next level and you can have success. Not to mention, you know, the university's doing, you know, tremendous from an enrollment standpoint and just from a visual standpoint. I think there's just an amazing thing going on here at Grand Forks under Dr. Armacost's leadership.
You mentioned the 106. That's the roster cap, I believe. Is that at like, how do I put that? Kickoff on day one or what? When can there only be 106 players, or is it after school starts? Can you go past 106? Because, you know, the school start walk on thing versus the preferred walk on. Yeah. How does the 106? Can you explain that quick?
Yeah. So we're back in COVID, guys. Nice. Today, today, this is what I know. And I would say that there is a deadline. There's a demarcation line where you have to hit that number. Now, because we opted into the House settlement, we actually have the ability over the next 4 years to be a little bit higher than that, say that the actual roster limits that was now imposed by that particular settlement. We've always been in that range anyway, so it's really not going to affect us all that much. There's other schools that are going to have to, over the course of the next 4 years, get down to that number. But I think the opt-in side for us was we had some other sports that we were going to have to figure out how we were going to manage that, and now it gave us more of a runway to get there. So for football, I'll be honest with you, we've been right at that number anyways. So it's not going to affect us as much as maybe some other schools.
All right. You've mentioned a couple of the words I had written down, but let's talk the landscape of college football. You're on the FCS football committee. We hear words like lawsuits, opting in, opting out, NIL, crazy terms now in college football. Give us your state of the state of college football right now in Bill Chaves' mind.
You know, I think college football is pretty healthy for a lot of different reasons. I think as long as you know where you fit in the landscape, I think there's tremendous opportunities for you. I do think as we're going through this change, this time, I would say for 50 years, like from Title IX, like 1972 to 2021, when NIL was deregulated, if you will, it was 50 years of pretty much wash, rinse, repeat. Now we're going through a process where we've got the Collegiate Sports Commission, which is really an oversight for cap management at the highest levels of football, not necessarily at the FCS level, but we have to play by those rules as well. And still the NCAA is out there as well. So it's almost Tank like we have a mom and a dad. It's like we have two folks now that we have to kind of work through. And life is changing through the courts. I'm seeing it in other sports, not necessarily football, but I'm seeing things in hockey where someone has played in the AHL, has played in the ECHL, has put in for a waiver to play collegiate sports, and it's been granted. Yesterday, literally yesterday, someone that played 2 years in the G League in basketball now is going to play, had got granted 2 years to play at Santa Clara. So those are some things that are happening literally in real time. Now, football is a little bit different. I mean, you're not going to go play in the NFL or even the CFL to some degree and probably come back, but who knows? Maybe if you have years of eligibility, maybe you can. So that's kind of where we're at right now. And it's anything but stable.
As far as the FBS goes, how soon? I mean, I know it's been going on for years, the talk of them doing, the big boys, not just the small, them doing their own thing, right? And we keep hearing that. Will they, do you envision, and I don't know if you can even answer this, but 5 years from now, let's say, just because it's such a gradual process, do you envision the NCAA having anything to do with the University of Alabama as far football goes in 5 years?
Yeah. So I mentioned the House settlement, and there were two things with the House settlement. There were back damages that the power at that point in time, Power Five conferences, the Pac-12 was part of the defendant conferences, and then the NCAA as a whole. So we were the NCAA, quote unquote, represented the rest of us. And so there's back damages for a 10-year period that we have to pay into. None of our former student athletes are really going to benefit from it, but because we were Division I, we get the opportunity to pay the back damages along with everybody else. I think there will become a time, I do, my crystal ball, there'll be a time where there will be a break at some stage. And I think that's probably about right, Kelly. I think in that 5-year range, the contracts for both basketball and CFP will be coming due. And I could see, let's just say, a change some sort of a different way that those schools may operate. In the rest of us will continue to do what we have been doing. It just may look different for certain schools at the highest level. That's going to be the trick here. Are we talking 40 schools? Are we talking 50? Are we talking 30? There's going to be a cut line. And we've all tried out for sports before, and sometimes you get cut. You know, who's going to get cut? And then what's left after that?
And who's going to be making that decision? The presidents of the schools, the ADs? Well, of who's coming today, with us?
Well, today, there's two conferences really making the decisions at this point in time. The commissioners of the SEC and the Big Ten.
Yeah, I suppose that's where the money's at.
That's what's happening. I mean, the other two conferences that make up the P4, the ACC and the Big 12, I think they're in the room. But I do think changing the van is the Big Ten and the SEC.
Well, let's take our first opponent, Kansas State. Where do they fall in? Are they going to be with the big dogs or?
That's a great question. I mean, it's hard to know how that will go, but I do think with the advent of this Collegiate Sports Commission, that's they're beginning the infrastructure that probably down the road will you'll see. I think that group will fall under that structure. And so I think it's happening in real time right now. I think someone, you know, for us playing in the FCS, I think we're in the right area code, and there's going to be others that'll probably end up joining our area code. Whether it's Kansas State or not, I don't know. But schools in the MAC, I mean, where do they end up? I mean, where are they going? And so at the end of the day, I think it's going to be really interesting over the course of the next several years.
Bill, let's transition into FCS playoffs. A lot of news come out the last few days now. I'm sure you were privy to this already. Sequence Equity getting involved and wanting to run the FCS playoffs, you know, as a for-profit model, something, you know, basically, okay, like the college football playoffs, I suppose, you know, something along those lines. So that's starting to get traction. I'm just trying to envision, you know, how it would work on a Saturday. I don't know how that would work, but is that something that's already been on your radar, or is that guys out and hedge funds speaking and trying to build their own traction, or is there something real there?
That's a good question. So that group, from what I'm understanding, presented to the commissioners, and so I haven't seen the presentation. I'll say this: I have a lot of questions. I don't know necessarily how you could potentially disband from the NCAA given some of the contractual arrangements that are in place right now. But then again, I don't have my law degree. And so I'm sure if there's always a will, there's a way. But Kelly, I haven't seen that presentation, so I'm probably not the one very well to be able to articulate what transpired there.
Hey, I got another question. Speaking of the NCAA, you brought that up, you know, like they would be running it all fall and then all of a sudden they're out or something, you know, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But, okay, overarching, you know, 30,000 foot view here, Bill, I always said, you know, people got mad at the NCAA because they weren't regulating NIL and this NIL money and this and that and this and that. And then I always said the NCAA wanted nothing to do with paying the players. So now people are mad at them for not, or coaches even, you see basketball coaches are mad because the NCAA isn't regulating NIL or, you know, regulating payments and whatever. You know, there's no real details, but you see coaches get mad at the NCAA or fans get mad at, and I always said, well, they wanted nothing to do with this for 50 years. There was an amateur model, right? Quote unquote amateur model for 50 years. So why would they want to just jump out in front and be like, okay, we'll be the one who regulates payments to players and payments, you know, am I seeing that right? Or is there, I mean, was the NCAA supposed to be doing more the last 5 years?
Well, I do think this. So if you go back in time with what the Olympics did over the course of time, I think when I first, watched the Olympics, it was kind of that true amateur model as well. But then there was the ability to get some sponsorship. There was the ability, because again, their big deal was what, once every 4 years. What are they doing in those other 3 years? And so I think, the Olympic movement evolved a bit. I think you could argue that the NCAA took a line, took a hard line, and never necessarily evolved. And I think that's probably some of the frustration. But I would say this, I think in our the words that probably no longer exist at all is the word amateur, but I do like the word either professional or non-professional. And that's where I guess I'm having a little bit of frustration with what I alluded to, with what is now happening with the student athlete that's going to be playing at Santa Clara this year that played in the G League. It feels like he had crossed a bridge into professional athletics, and now he's kind of coming back into non-professional. And that's where we need to figure this thing out. Honestly, I think at the highest level, I hate to say it, but I think this country has to go back and define what they want from college athletics, because I still think it should be tethered to academics. But we're seeing a lot of folks right now, going to the court saying, "Hey, I have a chance to financially benefit because I'm really not, in this case, an NFL player, but man, I'm a really good college player and I can benefit right now." Well, that's coming at the expense of a lot of high school kids that are not going to get the opportunity because roster spots will be taken up. So it's really complicated, but I do think we need help at the highest level for folks to say, "Hey, what do you want from this thing called college athletics?" Because it's unique. It's been going on for 150 years and it's the only one in the world.
Well, you see it in football. We talk about like South Dakota. South Dakota State got hit pretty hard with the transfers, but I look at basketball. Boy, the mid-majors, Coach Sather, when we saw him at Sweet Shots, I said, "You probably have the hardest job on campus." I mean, guy has just even close to a good year and they're gone. I think one of the coaches said after the Summit League tournament was last time he saw six players on his team, and he'll probably never see them again. Are we going to get this transfer portal figured out too? Because it's not fair to coaches. It really isn't.
Yeah, I think, again, I think Tank, part of it, there was such resistance for so long that it feels like the pendulum has really swung a different way. Basically, will it stabilize? I hope so, because I do think there's a benefit for even the students themselves, if they really want to pursue a degree, to not, I guess, move to three and four schools. But the argument on the other side always is, well, the regular student can. Why can't a student athlete? And, to some level, I get it. I get it. But you have to then, bring someone in, hope that they, love where they're at, they're getting developed, and they love all the connections they're making. And that's the reason why they want to stay. Now, if they have the opportunity to go to just say a higher level, and really, I guess, get in some ways life-changing money, I get it. I get it. So, but I think, our coaches, Tank, I think in specifically those sports, they're saying, "Hey, come here, develop yourself. Develop yourself. And once you're ready to go, go." No different than our hockey guys. I mean, if we get a top draft pick, how long will we have them for? Maybe 2 years. And then they're going to want to go on, hopefully, to the NHL. And so at the end of the day, I just think we got to look at it a little bit differently in a sense of, "Hey, this is our team this year. Let's get the best team possible and develop the heck out of them."
Back to your campus now, facilities. Obviously, they've been spoken to ad nauseum, just outstanding facilities, complete transformation of the campus, basically, not just athletic facilities. Hislop just went down. Okay, as far as athletics facilities go, I haven't, there's been so much going on that I haven't really worried about it. Is there anything else coming up? Like, I don't know if there's anything else left to do, honestly, but there's always something you can make better. Is there anything else? I'm trying to think. Soccer, I noticed a change out there. That you guys added stands on the west side. I believe I drove by, and that looks like you worked on that. What would be next, I guess, on campus?
So Eric Martinson does a great job. He kind of leads our, I'll call it master planning. And you know, we've got a few things on the docket. You're right. The Bronson Field, where our women's soccer team plays. Yep. We were able to, those stands actually came from Hislop. So those are in the, by the swimming pool. And so, you know, it was awesome to be able to do that. We always had that in the plan to do once Hislop came down. And so that was a great use of those particular seats. There's a few more things that we've got to do in that field. There's some infrastructural things that we need to kind of get done, whether it's a press box, more of a permanent press box, and some other types of areas, amenities, if you will. So that would be one on Bronson Field. A practice gym off the Betty would be something that's on a radar screen too that we're discussing. And then over here, where our offices are, and you know, obviously where you know, our sports performance center is, and in the Pollard, we're looking at potentially kind of finishing off the track area, if you will. And again, it just takes money, but I mean, so that maybe we can host meets outside. And so that's another one. And then the last one is, we're having conversations about Ray Richards Golf Course. And we're talking about possibly putting in like a Sweet Shots type thing there with developers. And we're having conversations with the neighborhood and the city. And so there's a construction project that's going to be going on 42nd anyways. Finally, there's going to be an underpass so that we don't have to wait for the trains. But at the end of the day, it's going to impact the golf course. And so we're having conversations about what might make sense there as well, so that UND Golf and quite frankly, cross country, because they have their cross country meets there. But that would be the home for UND Golf, which would be kind of cool. They'd have a 9-hole course plus a temperature controlled bay where they could hit, you know, basically 365 days a year.
Yeah, like you said, it takes money. Just because we have all the cool toys right now doesn't mean you need to stop. I think we've asked you before. You got the Champions Club. You got the NIL. You got a lot of different areas, and everyone, I think, is still a little confused. Where should I be giving? What's your answer, Bill?
Well, you know what I would say? I would always start with this. Never a better time to support a student athlete if you so choose. And whether that comes through a scholarship, which is important, or dollars that can benefit them directly beyond the scholarship, I think that's about a simple way to look at it. You have that opportunity. Now, also, our student athletes have the ability to do some things in the community with the business community that they were always restricted. Now they can do that. We still have Jonathan Holth and Matt Bonser still run our 1883 collective. And we feel like it's incredibly important that we still have that, because they are an amazing asset to us. And so between, you know, our self going out with the Champions Club, and then, you know, the third prong, really, obviously the institution, but the third prong is the REA itself, and Jody Hodson in our group over there. And, you know, we meet every week. We meet 7 a.m. every week. And we discuss, you know, what's next, what might make sense, what's happening around the country, and how can we be a leader? I mean, that's literally what we're doing each week, because it's changing every single day.